She said to me, "Well, you know, the main question I'm sitting with right now is, what if everything we have been doing up until now has had the wrong question at its core? The framework upon which we have built our entire educational theory has invited people to start with their own personal experience and reflection. Sounds good enough. But the challenge is that the people we are asking to do that work are primarily white and privileged people. Their white lens has been the main one around which we have built our entire educational and spiritual philosophy." Oh, holy smokes, I thought. I took a moment to reflect, and I felt the anxiety and the excitement at a new way of thinking creep up in my body as I nodded knowingly and non-anxiously at her, like, of course, yes, of course, I know exactly what you're talking about. And then two simultaneous thoughts emerged. One, we're on the verge of something entirely new. How exciting it is to be a part of that. And, oh, dear divinity, what in the world have we gotten ourselves into, and what am I doing in the midst of it? The best part was when Gail said that everything in Unitarian Universalism is in a period of deconstruction. She said, we're having to dismantle, along with our white supremacy, nearly everything we've been doing. Our curricula have centered voices of power and privilege. The language we have used in everything from our hymns to daily conversation utilizes metaphors based in ableism, language such as, I've been blind, but now I see, or do you hear? I look through our hymnal, and I tell you, it is hard to find a hymn that doesn't have ableist language in it somewhere. Our power structures, which have been grounded in hierarchy and power differential, also need to be called into question. And we need to curate a place of more collaborative generativity. It felt like the social tides were turning everything upside down, inside out, and there was little guidance for how to move forward. Now, I don't know about you, but when things around me feel like they're falling apart, I am quick to want to figure out some direction and put them back together. Reassemble, and do so as soon as possible. But Gail went on to say, not only are we deconstructing everything we've been doing, but we also aren't ready to reconstruct yet. We're in a period of waiting to see what will emerge, testing things little by little, allowing a new way to rise out of the ashes, slowly. Slowly, one step at a time. One step at a time. Boy, that sounds like a spiritual practice. One which involves breathing, some faith, lots of paying attention, and boatloads of patience. When I look to this image for today's worship, see a lot of rubble. Broken pieces, trash bags, rust, destruction, deconstruction, which means to create structure together or to de-create structure together. But I also experience graffiti like scars trying to tell a story. And it may not be a story we wish to know, but it is someone's story nonetheless, and it bears witnessing. I also notice, and it's hard to see because the colors are not very vibrant right here, but there's green grass growing, and there's lots of light shining down through the fractured walls that allows us to see and to be honest about the brokenness that's really there, so that we might then begin our process of cleanup and transformation. Perhaps this place smells dank, Perhaps glass shards glisten on the concrete floor and large metal barrels twisted with wear bear rough, blunt edges that could wound our hands if we're not careful. As we wait, as we sit in the midst of the deconstructed that is our world in many ways, all around us, we pause. And then we ask, what next? Even if we're not ready to reconstruct yet, where do we go from here? It's a lot of work to clean up and to rebuild. And it's scary because we can get hurt in the process. But we are humans. And we keep going, most of us. That's what we do. We keep going for ourselves, for our children, for our neighbors, and for those people we know who are our siblings halfway around the world. But what do we do as we sit in the rubble to even begin working toward a new future? Well, having grown up the daughter of a construction worker and having watched way too many home renovation shows, I'm going to invite you to allow me to lead you down the path of a construction metaphor. So based upon my observations and my infinite questions as a child, I know that we need to pour a foundation. And then we need to set our trusses, and we need to know where our load-bearing walls and beams are placed. So I started thinking, what is our foundation as Unitarian Universalists? While those of you sitting here amongst us today might have different thoughts on this, I would venture to say that the foundation for our faith is found in our seventh principle, the interdependent web of existence of which we are all a part. All people, all animals, all living and even non-living aspects of our natural world are wrapped up in this foundational statement of our faith. Now more than ever, we are witnessing the impacts our actions are having across the planet. We know of the forest fires in Australia and California, the tropical storms of the Caribbean, and of the melting snowpack in Antarctica. Yet our awareness of and honesty about our interdependence with all things in the web of existence must be that foundation, literally the base upon which everything else is built. But to the best of my limited scope of knowledge about construction, our building, let's say a church, could still be oriented in any direction on that foundation. We could say, sure, we know our actions impact others, but we don't really care. We want to maintain our privilege at the expense of others. Or we could choose to orient ourselves based upon our liberationist values, allowing those values to guide us. And that which gives shape to our future, our building, our church in this instance, must be load-bearing. These load-bearing components must be so strong and so solid that they can bear the weight of all of our human falterings and our hurts, because we do it to each other and to ourselves all the time. They must hold the weight of our hearts being broken, of differing opinions, of devastation that happens to us in times of natural disaster, of boundaries being crossed, and conflict and hurt that we inflict on one another. These load-bearing beams must be strong, and they must be regularly supported and reinforced. In our faith, these load-bearers are community, love, and justice. Paula Cole Jones, a racial and social justice consultant for the UUA, has suggested we should shift our thinking of Unitarian Universalism and church from a family metaphor, which a lot of us like to think of church as family, to one that's a community of communities. She explains the metaphor of family is too narrow to hold all we aspire to be. In family, this might ring true for you, it certainly did for me, in family there's often a pecking order. Bee's laughing. And everyone knows where the authority is. We also know who we can bring home and who we cannot. Moreover, the conceptualization of family in the U.S. is imbued with heteronormativity and individualism. A family is a group of individuals where some have power and others have less. But she goes on to say that the concept of community is open to a broader way of being in relationship. And ideally, there's a sense of belonging, of shared identity, safety, and empowerment, which might translate then to a greater sense of wanting to invite others in. In community, we discover family dynamics different from our own. We learn that things don't always have to be they were when we were growing up. We find those willing to give us a ride to the doctor and to bring soup to us when we are sick. And those willing, possibly, even to lend us a farm animal. So I have another story. Joy Berry, a religious educator colleague, moved her family to a farm in rural North Carolina just about 8 months ago. Now, I follow Joy on Facebook, and there I've had the privilege of witnessing how she and her family have undertaken the perils of farm life, learning to raise chickens and cows and sheep. In her posts, she regularly details her days with tender accounts of staying up late to nurse sick calves and getting angry at cows who eat the sunshades she has put up for her for their comfort. She had a really funny video of that where she's like yelling at the cows. Joy also shares her stories of farming in rural community where she is new but has been welcomed as someone who belongs. Most recently, she shared a text conversation she had with a neighbor about breeding her ewes, female sheep. And now she had the contact number for Gerald. We'll call this gentleman Gerald, a neighbor. And she knew he had a ram that he might be willing to lend, but she never met Gerald. So she texted him to inquire about whether she could borrow his ram to pair with her ewes for breeding. Though he had never met Joy, she shared these texts. And it's really beautiful because he responded positively without question. He said, "Of course, and you know, how are you going to get the ram to your house?" And she said, "Well, we have a truck, but that might be a little challenging to put the ram in the back of the truck." And he said, "Oh, I have a trailer. Come get my trailer. You can borrow it. No problem." And then she said, "Well, how much do I owe you?" And he said, "Nothing." She replied with gratitude, of course, and said she'd be glad to return the favor in the future. But he didn't know her at all. So this example of a community, of this rural farming community, is one that is guided by love. Because not all communities are guided with the same principles. And this one was guided by a love composed of kindness, of generosity of spirit, of implicit trust and communication. And though Joy's story doesn't demonstrate these qualities, I would also add that this kind of love practices healthy boundaries, where power dynamics are transparent and can be looked at and discussed. These are the markers of any good relationship, really, romantic or otherwise, and they must be the values which orient us as we start to reconstruct. Inherent in this love is a power analysis. At the end of her Facebook post telling of her story, Joy goes on to name the privilege of her position. She said though she had never met this rural neighbor, he was willing to trust her to take good care of his ram for more than a month and lend her his trailer. He stated as much in his response to her, but if Joy had belonged to a family of color, she wonders, would the trust have been inherent? While we don't know what this particular farmer's reply would have been, we know from the stories of our siblings of color that the response from too many individuals in our communities would have been a resounding no. And I can say that having grown up in rural Indiana. And so the final load-bearing beam must be justice, where we are willing to be honest about how we have oriented ourselves in the past, the voices we have allowed to be centered and allowed to shape our perceptions. How do those of us who are white and privileged among us use our power and our privilege first to actively follow our siblings of marginalized identities and the deconstruction that needs to take place. They tell us where things need to be broken down and to come apart so that we can rebuild. And then how do we pull back and sit in the discomfort of that null space awaiting the reconstruction? This is not a time to rush into a future of our own dreaming, but it is time to do the one next right thing. It is a time where we step back and where those of us in privileged places allow our siblings of marginalized identities, those who are queer and transgender, indigenous persons of color, women, our youth, to step forward and to guide us in the rebuilding. We put their voices at the center of our conversations. We seek out their works to gain insight into the world which they inhabit. I don't know what your bedside table looks like, but I have a lot of voices of color. I'm reading lots of different perspectives to gain some different insights, because I know I'm limited in my scope. And then we trust that we have something to learn from them, from the resilience they have come to know after generations of oppression, and to learn about how together we can put our hands and our hearts together for future, to build the future. So the interdependent web of existence, community, love, and justice. We may know little else about our future, little else about our next right step, but with the interdependent web of all existence as the foundation, and with community, love, and justice as our load-bearing beams, we may be able to sketch out the blueprints for the next step, and then the next step, until we are able to occupy a new reality. May it be true for you, for this congregation, for our association, for our nation, and for our world. Amen.